Welcome to an ongoing series of daily podcasts from the agribusiness team at IHS Markit. Our experts will provide timely insight to help you in navigating the challenges of the global coronavirus pandemic across the agriculture and food markets. On today's podcast, Neil Murray from our View Group is going to talk about the juice market as well as the wine market, which have been negatively impacted in various ways by both policy decisions and market decisions. Next is Christoph Berg from our FO Lit group, and he's going to start out by talking about what is going on in the wine market in Europe and how that's actually impacting the ethanol markets. And we'll finish up today with Alfie Middlebank, who's going to talk about the urea markets and what has been going on in that market in reaction to the corn market, which in turn relates back to the ethanol market. So a lot of really good topics today. And so, Neil, we'll start out with you.
Hello, thank you. Well, possibly, in our opinion, one of the stupidest government acts in this whole crisis has come from South Africa, which has not only decided to ban the domestic sales of all alcoholic drinks during the crisis and the lockdown. And while you can make a reasonable case for an action like that, the government has also decided to ban exports. This is a huge problem for the South African wine industry, which actually ranks as the world's ninth largest exporter, because the industry is already under pressure. The industry faces competition from other Southern Hemisphere producers, most notably Chile, but also Argentina and also Australia, and has had a bad time. It's had to establish its overseas markets really only in the last 20 years since the establishment of a true democracy in the country. And in order to compete, bearing in mind also they're very strong in the bulk wine market, they have to do it on price. They want to try and move their exports up into higher price points and sell more premium wines. But at the same time, the government has decided they're not allowed to export anything at all. So we'll see how that one plays out. Still in liquids and beverages, we come to orange juice. The United States has just published its latest retail orange juice sales figures. And again, they are up by 30, 40, 50%, depending on whether you're talking about long life or NFC or whatever. This is exactly what the US industry wanted, especially the industry down in Florida. The problem here is that it's impossible to tell first whether the demand for orange juice retail sales will continue when the crisis ends. And the second is whether it's just taking sales from what would normally have been sold through catering outlets, through restaurants and bars and so forth. Either way, it's good news for the industry at the moment, but we don't know how long it's going to last. There's other reasonably good news from the passion fruit juice and the pineapple juice producers. Fundamentally, all fruit juices consumption of are being pushed up by the demand for vitamin C and the public perception that a fruit juice is actually healthy for you, which is a nice turnaround from the way the fruit juice industry was demonized for its sugar content only a year ago. Again, we have to watch that one. In the UK, the supermarkets are rationalizing their fruit juice ranges, as we've said before, and they are cutting out some of the minor ones, but pineapple juice is actually being given reasonable shelf space. So, at least in terms of retail sales, the outlook is quite good for those at the moment. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. It's Christoph. Around 1 billion liters of wine made in Europe are at risk of being dumped due to a lack of storage, the European Parliament was told recently. The surplus is the result of the COVID-19 related closure of bars, restaurants and shops across the continent and a sharp fall in exports. To combat the crisis, the European Committee of Wine Companies has put together an emergency plan, which includes measures to bolster company finances as well as recover and rebuild the market. And one proposal in this context is the so-called crisis distillation, by which wine would be turned into ethanol. And this is aimed at reducing wine surpluses with the help of generous subsidies. The distilled wine is then used only for industrial purposes or as a biofuel. For example, in 2005, around 560 million liters of wine were distilled at a cost of 131 million euros. A reform of this legislation in 2009 phased out the subsidies for the compulsory distillation and promoted a three-year grubbing up scheme, which helped to structurally reduce supplies. As a result, the need to distill surplus wine has greatly diminished. Now, representatives from wine-growing countries have stated that it was imperative that surplus wine be distilled rather than lost. And one proposal says that winemakers should be paid around 80 euro cents per liter of wine they distill. And of this, the European Commission should pay 35 euro cents. Now, if applied to the 1 billion liters of wine in question, the measure could cost Brussels up to 350 million euros. In order to clear the storage tanks for the new wine harvest, the crisis distillation would have to take place between June and August. And according to informed sources, the scheme has received the backing of the French, Italian, and Spanish governments, which have asked the EU to approve the distillation program. Of course, there will be fierce opposition from the traditional ethanol sector, which is suffering from the loss of the fuel alcohol market, which can only be partly compensated for by increased demand for hand sanitizers and disinfectants. Thank you very much.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to have a look at the global urea market and how it's faring as the pandemic continues. As you know, urea is a nitrogen fertilizer, and as corn is one of the crops with a high nitrogen requirement, any strong movements on the corn price side are likely to impact sentiment on the urea side. So last week, as corn levels in Chicago moved closer to the $3 per bushel, this reverberated in the urea market with granular urea in NOLA or New Orleans trading down to $2.18 short for first half May on Tuesday, which was down from closer to the $2.40 per short level previously. So luckily, there was a quick recovery on Wednesday with prompt barges trading back up to previous levels and above, as we are seeing good current local demand for spring application, with supplies more likely to be tight than anything else. So outside of the US, we continue to see stocks building on the supply side, with buyers everywhere acting very risk averse. And so there's still quite a lot of length in the market for May shipments. On the other side, because of this short-term thinking, we are seeing prompt cargoes sold at only small downward corrections. For example, last week with Egyptian prompt granular urea sales concluded in the low to mid 230s FOB metric ton dollars, which was down only $2 to $3 week on week. While in the Arabian Gulf, we saw $2.34, $2.35 metric ton FOB, which was also only down a few bucks week on week. So looking ahead, all eyes are now again on India. We have another tender that's expected to be announced for Kharif requirements. And we are really expecting this any day now to include shipment up to first half June. Likely especially for the West Coast, as most of the 747,000 tons sold in the last tender on 30th of March moved to the East Coast. So the big question in the tender will be how much will be on offer, especially from China. These tenders are pretty transparent with everyone's offer and volume open to view. And sometimes this can lead to more of a negative impact. However, first up, we have to wait for them to announce. And until then, further downward movement is likely. Thanks.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to get in touch with any comments or questions for us to consider for one of our future podcasts, please contact us via our website or reach out to any of our account management people or content people that you may know. We look forward to seeing you next time.